This is Farmer D bringing you season two of the Citizen Farmers Podcast, where we are reimagining community through interviews with citizen farmers throughout the country. This season, our goal is to inspire, teach, and connect you to the projects, people, and places that are changing the way we live through regenerative agriculture, conservation, and community development. Are you ready to build a healthier, more connected world? Let's get started. We're live.
Very live.
It is Friday, December 4th, 2020. We're in the final home stretch of COVID 2020, the last month of hell. Well, not really, but for 2020 anyway. I'm here with my good friend and podcast collaborator, Ben Bernstein.
Hello.
We're in the in-between. We're in this liminal moment here, both literally and figuratively, between season one, Citizen Farmers' first podcast season, that we completed, about 2 months ago? And we're about to launch into season two. And this is kind of a moment for us to just kind of riff a little bit and talk about where we're at. Ben and I are going to just have a little conversation. What's up, Ben?
Hi, Darren. How are you?
Good, man. I'm doing really good.
Yeah, this is great. You're in my head again, which is awesome. Let's catch up. Where you been? Where are you now? And where are you headed? What's new with Farmer D?
Well, Ben, it's actually pretty exciting. We just arrived to my childhood home in Atlanta. I'm in Daisy, the RV, parked in the driveway that I grew up in Sandy Springs, a little north of the downtown Atlanta, about a half hour north of Atlanta, in a little suburb. This was my childhood home. And, we've been traveling as a family for 2 months. We left Green Valley, Sebastopol, California, the 2nd of October, to get out of the fires. And we packed up all our stuff in pods. We loaded up Daisy, the RV, and we drove cross country. Lots of stories, but I'll save those for later. But basically, we drove cross country. We got to New Jersey, and then we drove up to Vermont, planning to spend 4 or 5 days with some friends up around Burlington and Putney. And we spent a month. We got pulled into the Vermont vortex. We got there, and we were basically this is the lowest COVID rates in the country. Vermont was hadn't had a death in 3 or 4 months. They were getting single digit cases. And so we kind of thought, well, why would we leave here as COVID was starting to spike again? And I got to be honest, Vermont is a pretty magical place. We started getting really interested in the possibility of a move to the Burlington area. So we started looking at properties and kind of getting familiar with the different neighborhoods and schools and parks and trails. And it's just a great culture of land, farming. Beautiful. It's beautiful. And, progressive. We have a couple of good friends there. I have a few farm projects. Got involved in this really cool project called Bread and Butter Farm, which is this really cool community farm, regenerative farm that's expanding. Basically they're on 140 acres now. And now they've worked out a deal to buy the adjacent 600 acres. And they're doing a big land trust, preserving the land for ag. And then they're going to build a little community for their farm staff because they can't afford to live in the area. I got interested in it because it's the kind of community that I would actually see us living in, which was pretty exciting because it's really interesting actually, and it speaks to kind of I think where we're going with this podcast next, which is here we are, my family looking for a place to live, right? We left California, we're in the RV, we're trying to figure out where, we're not sure about California. We're a little nervous about settling. And today there was another big fire that broke out. And there was an article in the paper today that, fire season is now year round in California. So it's not even a season thing anymore. So, we're exploring, we're on an adventure. And Vermont was one of those places that we were really curious to get to know a little bit better. And what I discovered, one of the things that I discovered when we were in Vermont, and I find this is true all over the country, are the areas with the coolest cities, right? The really nice cities that are extremely desirable for families like ours, Burlington, Vermont being one of them. you know, Boulder, Colorado, Bend, Oregon, you know, Asheville, North Carolina. I mean, there's tons of these cool cities that everybody wants to live in. The problem is everybody wants to live there. So it can become very expensive. And usually it's kind of, you know, the money tends to be the driving factor as to who ends up living in these really desirable places. And so what's happened around Burlington is this really nice area just south of Burlington has become very expensive. And a lot of the folks that are, you know, running these, you know, regenerative farms and community farms, they can't afford to buy there. They can't afford to even rent there. So they're, you know, it's a major issue. So, you know, with Bread and Butter Farm, this project that we've been working on, it's this really cool example of a coming together of the city of South Burlington, the Vermont Land Trust, the Agrarian Commons, and Dirt Capital, which is a mission investment group trying to help support regenerative farms and farm housing, affordable housing. So it's a cool project. Unfortunately, the challenge is, the problem, there's just not many places like that. And there's so few options, you know, for people to be able to live in the communities that we want to live in and afford to be able to buy there or even rent there. And obviously, you know, there are lots of people who have even a harder time affording to live in these places than we do. And so I think there's a real need. So Vermont was awesome. Love Vermont. So we spent a month there. We weren't expecting to spend that much time, but we ended up spending a month. And then it got cold and we weren't really finding a great rental. We weren't finding a place that we were ready to buy. We need a little more time to get our finances kind of sorted and kind of be in a position to buy. And we definitely have a much better idea of where, if we were to move there or get involved in a project there to have a home in that area, we have a much better sense of the community and the different neighborhoods, and we're keeping an eye on it. But, you know, anyway, it got cold. A lot of our friends there were like, look, we're just kind of quarantining. Everybody's shutting down. Nobody was going to be social. And we just thought, what a weird time to try to do a winter in Vermont during COVID when we don't know anybody. We're not really prepared for it. We didn't even have a good house. So we just packed up and headed south. We drove down to Atlanta yesterday and pulled up to my parents' house. And we're now unpacking our suitcases for the first time in 2 months. And we're stoked.
That is quite a journey, my friend. It looks like you saw some interesting things out there. So now you're in Atlanta and you're kind of like getting your bearings, as it would say. This is, you know, common ground for you. This is where you grew up and actually where your, not where your farming journey began, but definitely the entrepreneurial Farmer D brand kind of started when you were making, you know, garden planters and stuff like that. And when you moved west from California, you started in Atlanta. So this is a bit of a full circle loop for you, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, we're coming home. Atlanta's always been home for me. You know, I mean, this is, my parents have stayed in the same house, since I was, I guess, about five is when we moved here. And we immigrated from South Africa when I was about three. We lived in an apartment for a little while. And then my parents bought this house when I was about five or so. And they've just, my dad's a woodworker. So, and he's just been expanding on the house for, 35 years now, more, almost 40 years. So it feels very home. I'm literally like sleeping in the room that was my childhood bedroom, you know, and actually had some pretty funny dreams last night. I was like having like these dreams of when I was a kid. I had like all these kid, like childhood memory dreams last night. It was so fun. Like all these people that I hadn't thought about for so long. Yeah, so it just feels really grounding to land a little bit because we've been so not grounded for so long. So I pulled Daisy into the driveway. It was funny. I pulled up. I couldn't get the RV down the driveway because this tree was kind of blocking the driveway. Daisy's so tall. So I ended up spending a couple of hours when I first got here on a phone call with a client on a ladder chopping down this tree. It was pruning up the branches so I could get Daisy down in the driveway. And she fits perfect. So we're stoked. We've got kind of Daisy here in the driveway, and you open the door and you're in the little front kind of driveway play area for the kids with all kinds of games and garden. And then my parents' house is just fabulous. It's just so cozy. They just put a hot tub, literally arrived the day we did. So they took our first ever hot tub here this morning. We're so grateful. My parents have been really excited to have us back here, and you know, they're great cooks. My dad bakes, you know, my mom's just like great with the kids, and the house is super cozy. And you know, but you know, the plan is not to necessarily stay here long term, but you know, a couple month or two, or you know, it's kind of open ended, and it gives us a little breathing room, right? One to like gives us a little space to get you know, help with the kids, which over the last year with COVID, three young kids, has been just brutal. I mean, just like there's just like no breaks. You know, I can't tell you how many nights in the last few months I've been up in the middle of the night with Sequoia or Sibley, or you know, just waking up in the night, just like just because they're just constantly on the move. You know, our kids have been completely out of routine. You know, we're homeschooling, road schooling, we're traveling, we're in a new place all the time. They're amazing. And they've just, you know, they're obviously learning how to kind of roll with the flow. But it's been challenging. So, you know, we're getting a little breather, which feels great. And, you know, and I've got a lot of work and community here in Atlanta. So I'm excited. I get to, you know, kind of got the mic back in the podcast studio here in the RV for the first time in months. It has been so hard to even do any kind of podcast recording from the road, with the kids always on top of each other and us. And so that feels good. And then I've got a couple of clients in this region, so I'm excited. I'm going to head up to Tennessee early next week for two projects in Tennessee, and then down to Florida, a couple of projects in Georgia. So I'm going to be able to get a lot of work done. And one of my longtime, you know, coworkers, kind of partners in design is Greg Ramsey. He's based here in Atlanta. He and I have been working together for a couple of decades now, so that'll be nice to actually do some work with him in person, some design work together. And so that feels great. Meanwhile, you know, we just still kind of figuring out where we go next, you know, if we're going to head back west, if we're going to, you know, settle down somewhere, and if so, where. And it's kind of a weird place to be, you know, just not knowing where the end of the road kind of is, right? Where the road is open. We don't really have a landing spot. We're very fortunate that we have my parents right now to just kind of land here for a minute while we just kind of settle down, stabilize, get the kids back in a routine with school, get back in a little routine with work, get back in some like fitness and exercise routine. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I'm feeling good.
That's great. Can you talk about a little bit? I mean, now you were in California in this kind of, you know, cornucopia place where there's, you know, you were living on a farm, and you had been, obviously you'd been running a farm. And, but, you know, I think some people out there in our podcast, you know, audience aren't necessarily as familiar with your consulting work. But so now you're in Atlanta, you're in a different part of the country that probably has a different, you know, scene, different ethos, maybe, when it comes to community farming, agrihood, you know, CSA. So talk about a little bit where you've landed, your experience, maybe a project or two, just kind of what you're working on in your work there, and you know, just how that will inform and propel this, you know, podcast and the conversations, you know, we'll expect to hear, you know, in the coming months.
Yeah, I'm so psyched, man. This is going to be so much fun this next season. You know, we talked, you know, Ben and I, you know, you and I have been talking for a while about just getting the Citizen Farmers podcast going, right? And I feel like this first season was really fun just to kind of dig into the book, you know, and kind of share the philosophy of the whole Citizen Farmers philosophy and the framework of the life cycle of the garden, kind of understanding the process and the virtues. You know, digging in a little bit deeper into the philosophy and the principles and some of the practical tips around the book. But really what the book is really all about is about integrating gardens and farms into society, right? Across society. And my consulting has largely been based on that, on the practice of helping to, you know, inspire, you know, projects, helping to design, develop, you know, and set up these kinds of different farms and gardens and communities based around farming and gardening around the country. And so what I'm looking at and really looking forward to for the next season, which we're going to start, you know, pretty much this is the kickoff, is really highlighting these different projects and people at this intersection and showcasing a number of the projects we've been working on over the years. We're going to spend time really digging into them. You know, we're going to interview the kind of the visionaries of these projects to understand kind of why they started them, what they've learned in their journey, how those communities, urban farms, community farms, how these nonprofits and neighborhoods are making a difference, what they're doing, how to connect with them, how to you know, get inspired and learn from their failures and successes. And, you know, for me, this is really kind of going to be very fulfilling because I think one of the greatest kind of benefits of my work over the years has been the people that I've gotten to work with, the relationships that I've built with all these amazing people. And I want to tell their stories, you know, and learn from them, get inspired from them, and get more people exposed to these great projects and initiatives that are making a difference kind of in the spirit of the citizen farmer.
That's very intriguing. And just, you know, just to dig a little deeper, you know, just like the at-home listener, you know, citizen farmer, like, you know, what is your hope that, you know, they can take away or learn from these stories of these, you know, probably career professional entrepreneurial farmers, like at the essence, like, what are you hoping to convey? Like, you know, if I'm at home, I'm not going to maybe go start like a commercial composting operation, but like, at the essence, how do we tie together where we've been with citizen farmers and like where we're headed? Like, where's the nugget for you?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, I look at it as in kind of three main aspects to that. So one is inspiring people. You know, I think a big part of this is that listeners, people who we share these stories with will find inspiration and hope. Right. I think that's a big part of this is I think there's so many of us that, you know, are concerned about, you know, climate. We're concerned about economy. We're concerned about health. We're concerned about, you know, the ecology and nature. We're concerned about farmers and local food systems. And so what this is about is really, you know, providing some inspiration and hope around these really amazing initiatives and people kind of leading the way when it comes to doing good work in these areas, you know, focused around, you know, sustainability, around conservation of nature, around like revitalization of land and agriculture, around community food systems, around food justice, food security, affordable housing, and some of these like really relevant, important issues and how they're being addressed kind of through the lens of agriculture and community development and urban farming and food and entrepreneurship. So, you know, I think so the three aspects, you know, so that's one is inspiration, you know, really inspiring people. I think, you know, I think there's so many inspirational stories to share. And the second is connecting people to these people and projects and places and movements. And I think we all kind of yearn to be more connected, especially now with COVID, right? I mean, we want to be more connected to each other. We want to be more connected to cool things happening. We want to be connected to people and projects that we can learn from, contribute to, be a part of, support. So that's a big part of it. The second big part is connecting people. And the third is really nourishing our community with access to, you know, really good information as we learn and expand our knowledge and our skill sets and our networks, really, you know, nourishing people with tools and resources they can use to grow healthy food, prepare healthy food, to go out in their community and make a difference, to not only nourish themselves, but also nourish their family and their community and in turn nourish themselves in the process of doing that. And ultimately, the goal is like inspiring, connecting, and nourishing all of us to live healthier, happier, more healthy, resilient lives. know, and there's lots of different ways to do that. There's little things we can do just in our own personal lives, and there's big things we can do, you know, whether that's, you know, an entrepreneurial endeavor or getting involved in an organization or a company or a community, and, you know, finding a way to connect to a better, you know, a better life, a healthier life, a more environmentally sound, more resilient life, more vibrant life. So that's really, I mean, I've always found for myself, you know, I've always found a lot of inspiration and motivation from seeing what other people are doing and, you know, seeing what they've seen, their excitement, their passion, hearing their stories, you know, really digging into their challenges, their innovations. And that always, you know, reinvigorates me. And I think being able to share that with our audience and also with, you know, inspiring more of these types of projects, inspiring people to support the projects that are already going, you know, helping gain, kind of shine a light on those is one of the goals. Another is to like really inspire more of this kind of work in the world and to connect people together so that we can do do the work more effectively as a community, as a collective.
Great. That's awesome. You know, just kind of going back to something you said earlier, I mean, with the integration of farms and community farming, agrihood and society, you know, and being more important now than it ever has been before. And you've just done this kind of cross-country trip where I imagine you started off in California. That's very about this. You were in Vermont and you've gone through different areas and you've probably seen everything from incredible, you know, landscapes of farming and community to just food deserts, you know, urban areas like DC and places like that. Now, I mean, just what do you see as like, when it comes to the integration of farming and society, what do you think is like this, the most like crucial, I guess the most crucial thing that could happen in the movement, like today, to see, you know, coming forward where you're, you know, you talked about this intersection and the connecting of citizen farmers to entrepreneur farmers. Like what's the main ingredient here that could really push us more towards food security and food, you know, food justice? Like what's the main ingredient here that you've seen just in this cross country adventure?
Yeah. Well, look, I think there's a couple of key challenges that we face as a society, and they've all been exacerbated by COVID. And, you know, we see the food lines, right? We see the lines of people at food banks and the real challenge of hunger in this country. It's real. Poverty, food insecurity, huge issue. We have to address this issue. And that starts with food. It starts with making sure that people have access to healthy food. And that is directly connected to environmental justice and to health, and you know the health issues that especially poor communities face, but really that we face as a society as a whole. There's huge health issues. I mean, COVID, you know, it has its, it, you know, it's taking its toll on those who are most weak. We don't hear enough conversations, I don't think, around just general health in our population. Right? If we were all healthier, more resilient, in our diets and our activity, we would all be much more resilient, much more, you know, prepared to deal with things like a pandemic, right? So I think just generally, like our society is not very healthy. And a lot of that is directly tied to our food system and the supply chains and the large corporate food companies and ag companies and our government subsidies that drive this unhealthy. And I say unhealthy both from an environmental perspective, from an economic and fair wages farmer perspective, and ultimately from consumer health perspective. It's just the whole thing is just really unhealthy on so many levels. And which brings up the other intersecting point, which is climate change and the environmental devastation that we see happening as a result of poor agricultural, you know, practices, the, you know, poor suburban sprawl and development and industry and the shipping of products, especially food, and all the fossil fuel consumption that goes into our food system and into generally our kind of lack of local production of all kinds of things, right? Not just food, but all kinds of things. So I think we've got major work to do there on local food systems. And then the other piece is around housing. I mean, I just think this is becoming one of the most most significant issues of our time, is that people can't afford just a roof over their head and food on the table. And so I really think it's, you know, part of my motivation in working at this intersection of development and agriculture is that we need to address these issues of local food systems, of healthier relationship to the land, the way we steward land, the way we take care of soil, the way we store carbon in our soil and through agriculture and forestry and land management. And then the way that we build communities that are for people of different incomes and of multi-generational, multi-income type communities, so that we're creating more of a what's happened with housing is that we're just pricing people out and pushing people into their silos, right? So you have like the poor neighborhood, the rich neighborhood. You have this gated community, this suburban, this urban blighted area, this urban wealthy area, and it's really created a lot of issues. I think we don't understand each other. We don't support each other. We don't connect with each other across those socioeconomic barriers because of poor design and poor models. I mean, affordable housing is one of the largest issues in almost every place I've lived and everywhere that I'm looking to live. This becomes the big issue over and over and over again. There's a lack of housing for people of lower, and I don't mean low income necessarily alone. I'm talking about all kinds of, income levels. And, that's a big challenge, huge challenge. And so what I'm excited about is I do feel like this combination of land stewardship, local food systems, improving health, addressing hunger, addressing affordable housing, they can all be solved through a reimagining of how we design communities that are based around stewardship of land for nature and agriculture, the preservation and good stewardship of nature and agriculture that people get to connect with and participate in as a means of being healthier, taking hikes in the woods, walking instead of driving, eating fresh food, having access to social interaction with your neighbors in a vibrant, diverse community. These are key ingredients to happiness and health. And being able to address these multiple challenges in one holistic solution is really exciting. I mean, to me, it's like, how do we take a more holistic approach to addressing the housing, the health, and the environmental challenges of our time? And that's the intersection that I see huge opportunities. And whether that's in an urban community, whether that's in a kind of peri-urban, suburban edge community, or it's rural towns and revitalizing small rural communities, there's tons of opportunities. And, it starts with, government, both incentivizing and regulating to ensure that, the way that development happens, that it's addressing environmental and agricultural benefits, that it's addressing affordable housing. And then it's up to the leadership in the development community that we start to prioritize creating more resilient communities, more sustainable communities, more inclusive, diverse communities, more land and food-based communities that are more circular economy-based, more resilient. And it's up to consumers, so to speak, to kind of seek out and demand those kinds of places to live and get involved in your community to help bring some of these solutions to life.
Yeah, I mean, that sums it up a lot. Even saying like, well, you can vote with where you buy your salad. It's like, you're going to go to a name brand grocery store or sign up for that CSA that I just talked about. That's in your area. And all of a sudden you're shifting your food dollar towards, a community that's trying to bring humans back into the fold with each other. And I also feel like by not growing our own food or sourcing our food locally, like we become so disconnected from the land and each other, and just how therapeutic, we've talked about in this podcast, just even getting your hands in the dirt can be like touching the earth. I mean, it's a big problem, as you highlight, like on so many different levels, psychological, there's health issues, and then there's societal issues and economic issues involved with us, not growing our own food, not sourcing our food from our local community, and supporting the companies that are out there that are trying to do it for us. Like if we don't have time because we're busy with our work, our life, our kids, then, let's shift our focus towards the people who are saying like, we'll do this the right way. You just, just sign up. You know what I mean? It could be that could be that easy. And that's like a vote. And then, if you're more, like you say, politically minded, like, starting to hound our local, state, and federal, elected officials, like, change this, push more capital towards these projects. Let's mandate higher health standards in our food school programs, and then get these programs to support local CSA farmers. So then these kids who are depending on the schools for food, as they have since, March, especially, like all this, the schools here in California have made sure that kids can still get their meals, but that they're sourcing their food, not from a big box truck that comes once a week, that is, could be multiple local organizations delivering the meat and the vegetables and the dairy, because it's just an economic fact. When you spend that cash at the bottom level, it just stays in the region much longer than if you just send it straight to the top to some investor, super fund. So
you're so right on. And I think this is what the citizen farmers movement is really all about, which is, basically shining a light on a lot of these things and inspiring people to take action, right? That's the fist of beets. That's the power of the people, right? It's about, I just wrote down, it's like voting with your buck, your bowl, and your ballot. Right. So that is the power that we have, right? We have the power to vote with our dollar and how we choose to spend our money. We have the power to choose what we eat for, at least as much as we're able to, financially, but we're able to make some decisions about the types of, the way that we impact the food system by what we eat. And obviously, we have the ballot. We choose who we want to put in power to influence policy that's going to have a huge impact. And I just see so much of the issue is then corporate subsidies, corporate influence of government, subsidizing corporate interests. Okay. This is the problem with our food system at large too, is that we have huge corporate influence in politics. And, we saw that come to light big time over the last administration. And then what we need is citizen subsidies, not corporate subsidies. We need those resources need to be going to address the issues I talked about that make for, healthy citizens, not healthy companies. At first, I'm not against business. I'm not against the economy. I'm not against, good business, but accountability, we need to incentivize and regulate so that the kind of businesses that get those subsidies or the kind of businesses that are promoted and supported by consumers and government alike should be those that are doing the right thing with land stewardship and protecting the environment, doing the right thing for the way they treat their workers. Doing the right thing in the way that their business models are affecting the kind of change we need to see in the world, socially, environmentally, economically. So this is at the essence of what we're talking about. It's really the citizen farmers idea. The idea of a citizen farmers movement is really about empowering people to see that they do have power, and that we need to kind of get together and support the leadership that's going to guide us in the right direction. I do feel like, you know, the direction we're heading right now is more positive than it has been in a long time. And I think there, and I, one other thing I didn't mention in the lot, in that kind of list of, you know, housing and hunger and health and climate change is jobs. We need to create a really promote jobs in the sectors that are going to help, you know, address these issues of, you know, environmental and social issues. We need to, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity right now to kind of, you know, fire up the economy by investing in jobs, people who are doing the kind of work that needs to get done on the ground, you know, farming, taking care of the land, taking care of each other, you know, growing food, preparing food, distributing food, you know, educating people, building communities that are the communities of the future, these regenerative types of communities. That's where we need to be investing. If we're going to make a difference and try to like set future generations up for success, where they can live in a, they can breathe the air, they can drink the water, they can eat the food, and they can live healthy lives. It's our responsibility to get our shit together. And I think if we're going to get our shit together, we as citizens need to rise up and put the people in office who are going to point the compass in that direction, and not continue to just serve corporate interests and, you know, extract for profit at the expense of future generations. We've seen the negative externalities that those kinds of models have. We're suffering the consequences of them on so many levels. It's a reason why, in part, we don't have a home, because the fires are raging in California right now as I speak. There are so many challenges that we need to face up to as a civilization right now. And this is not just a domestic issue. This is a global issue. We're seeing this across the globe. And I think one thing that's really important, I really enjoyed a good friend of mine, Lauren, from A Growing Culture, was on an interview with Zach Bush this week, talking about the peasant farmer movement around the world. And they do really amazing work highlighting and advocating and connecting peasant farmers and protecting their rights, indigenous people who have been, you know, taken off their land. They are bulldozed over by government and corporate interests, and disrespected and disenfranchised and disempowered, and in many cases dislocated from their homes. It's a tragedy, and it's happening all over the world. It happens it's happening right now on our clock. And, you know, we're just not currently the trajectory that politics and government and power has gone in has been, I think, very much dominated by greed, you know, kind of corporate greed, money. It's allowed for a system that continues to beat down on some of the most hardworking and most important skill set people in the world. You know, the peasant farmers, the artisans, the indigenous communities, the BIPOC community has been, you know, just treated so poorly across the globe for too long. And I think it's really important that we, in this country and around the world, start to, you know, really work at addressing this, acknowledging this, and redesigning our economy and the way that we engage with land stewardship and development in a way that provides housing, food, and jobs and healthier, happier lives for everyone. And That's an area that I feel like in this next season of Citizen Farmers and the work that we want to be engaged in, and the projects we want to promote, and the kind of change we want to see happen, this is what needs to be the focus.
Well, Darren, that's all very excited, and I'm for one excited to hear these stories, to work on these stories and help share these stories. And there is so much work to do just to raise awareness about all these issues, from how, you know, corporate farming affects our well-being and our health. And, you know, you mentioned indigenous cultures. I recently saw the movie Gather, and it just, you know, floored me to see how, you know, in South Dakota, you know, which is my neighborhood where I'm from, how these indigenous landowner farmers are, you know, doing what they can to bring the herds of buffalo back, and how the Apache farmers who are, you know, they've built greenhouses and they've built a community restaurant that their farm feeds, teaching people like, hey, you know, we can grow this stuff. And they actually turned a convenience store into a community restaurant, you know, and like they said, this was the grocery store. There was no food here. Like you went and you got Twinkies and soda pop, you know, versus now we're serving food that we grow right here. So relearning their ancient ways as a means of regaining their health and their sovereignty. And I think there's so much to learn from that, but you know, obviously the narrative has to be changed, and I guess people's priorities, and I guess, you know, hopefully through this pandemic, you know, people can maybe we can shine a little light, you know, hopefully with this podcast and wake people up. Cause you know, what I see from my point of view is that a lot of the people living in areas where farming has just become a machine and an arm of the greater, you know, corporate oligarchy, is that people out in the Midwest who are probably suffering the most, or in areas where people are suffering the most economically and in their health, could benefit the most from grabbing a hoe and some seeds and just starting to grow their own food. So, you know, but yeah, it's all about awareness, and hopefully, you know, this next season can help us grow as a podcast and share this awareness and really inspire people to help take things to the next level, you know, on all fronts.
I'm super stoked to dig in deeper in season two and really start to interview folks and highlight these projects. So the plan, as I'm thinking of it now, is to do a series of case studies, really like highlight through a series of blog posts, interviews, you know, podcast interviews, and, you know, promoting these really innovative projects that kind of are showing examples of what can be done, what is being done to kind of show a better way, you know, forward. And inspiring citizen farmers to support those kinds of projects and companies and brands, and also to get involved.
That's great. Well, looking forward to it. Darren, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ben. Have a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to season two of the Citizen Farmers Podcast, where we are reimagining community to create a healthier, more connected world. Do you care about the health of people and the planet? Connect with the Citizen Farmers movement to grow healthy food, build your community, and give back to the earth through actions big or small. Follow us on Instagram or sign up for our newsletter at citizenfarmers.org. To learn more about our work at Farmer D, designing and building vibrant farm-based communities, visit us at farmerd.com. Thanks for listening.